Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change here on our 4th of July. We've got half an hour left in our program. Thanks again for joining us. I welcome on the line Dr. Monica Hudson, based in California today. Hi, Monica.
Hi, how are you?
I am terrific and so glad I was able to catch you in your hectic schedule between being a director of a nonprofit and university teaching to join us on this special Saturday.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure being with you and your audience.
Very good. Let me give a brief introduction. Dr. Monica Hudson is an assistant professor at the University of San Francisco. She teaches graduate and undergraduate organizational behavior, entrepreneurship, and public administration courses. Monica concurrently serves as a director of the Gellert Family Business Resource Center, a nonprofit that promotes and supports family businesses in the 9 counties of the greater San Francisco Bay Area. They do things such as support religious, charitable, scientific, literary, and educational endeavors. Monica's background for over 30 years is in California state, county, and city government, with specific expertise in mediation and small group facilitation, strategic planning, business and economic development, and community engagement. During this time frame, she served as city manager of Colma and East Palo Alto, assistant city administrator of Millbrae, and a range of management positions in Oakland, Oxnard, Sacramento, and South San Francisco. Monica always found herself in the thick of navigating financial crises and policy and community change with a specific eye on collaborative public and private partnerships. Having studied communication and political science at Northwestern University in Illinois, Monica completed graduate work in public administration at California State University Northridge, an MBA from the University of San Francisco, and how the two of us met, of course, was she received her doctorate of management from Case Western Reserve University, researching how identity impacts individual and collective behaviors. So there we go. We gotcha, didn't we?
Thank you so much. That is so flattering.
You got it. Very good. Well, Monica, you know, you're one of those who pursued doctorate work and then said, gee, I'm going to launch myself in the direction of academia, which you've done successfully. But yet, lo and behold, you find yourself again back into that circle of navigating business enhancement, economic development right there on the ground through the Gellert Family Business Center. Was this an intentional step to make sure you were doing both at the same time, or has it just kind of come your way again?
Well, I think it came my way again, Zara. It was really fortunate in that the Gellert Family Business Center is actually a part of the University of San Francisco.
Right.
And it was established in 1994 by then Associate Dean Eugene Muscat, who specifically was looking at taking advantage of the relationships that a lot of alumni had who were alumni of USF, but actually running businesses. A lot of them got their MBAs to actually enhance their capacity with family business. And so the center was started then through a really generous donation from the Gellert Foundation. They are a major construction-related business in the Bay Area. They did a lot of residential and commercial housing. And they felt that it was really important, given what had gone on with the development of their business, to really support the niche of family business, and specifically to try and provide support to some of the issues that are more unique to family businesses as opposed to kind of the general arena of small business.
And so, could you give us a sense of some of those unique challenges?
Yeah, some of the challenges go into the arena of how decisions are made when you're talking about family dynamics being there, because as we know, it's always hard to figure out growth for a business as it develops over the years, and it's even harder if you're trying to deal with family members making those decisions. Some other issues that are unique to family businesses also deals with the issue of succession.
Yeah, sure.
because the family may or may not want to bring in outsiders as the business needs to transition from one generation to the next. And then there's the similar issues that general small businesses have about, you know, financing and various other things. But I think primarily when you're talking about decision-making and family dynamics, as well as succession planning, that those are two particular areas that distinguish family businesses from just any small business.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on the money because, no pun intended, but you think about, you know, the decision to have a family reunion. Let's say this is just a social family reunion. Oh, my goodness, how in the world can you come to that conclusion short of just delegating it to one family member where they kind of have to take their lumps for that given year's event? Think about, as you said, the nuances around, gee, should we be financing, you know, an addition onto our factory? And knowing that, gee, this is also touching in then potentially the money that's being put aside for future generations of our children, that's got to be a very dicey process.
And it really is, and particularly when you've got, you know, more than one, you know, family member
right.
in the next generation, mm-hmm. you know, issues of just family dynamics, who likes who best, now gets caught up in an economic decision about running a business.
Yeah, and like you said, is that you find yourself in situations where perhaps not all of the children want to be involved in the business. They'd rather pursue another venue, but yet, you know, they still have a financial stake potentially and an influence in that dynamic.
It's really critical to kind of talk that through. One of the reasons why the center has continued on at USF is we have a lot of students who are actually sent by their family because of the center to attend USF. And it's very interesting when they're in their first family business course and they reveal to Professor Muscat that, hey, I actually don't want to be in the family
right.
business. And, you know, how do I tell my family that that's not where I want to go? So there's a whole lot of, you know, kind of interpersonal dynamics, and it's very interesting because it feeds into research that I've been trying to do in this whole way of how people see themselves and how they want to then turn around and act.
Oh, and indeed. In fact, we talk about on this show, of course, individuals who've made the choice to leave a career that they might have had in a given industry for a long time. And this identity tearing that happens because people will say, so where is it you work or what is it you do?
Mm-hmm.
And to not being able to say, I'm a lawyer or I'm still an automotive engineer, but I'm just Charlie. There's big leaps that play out in that dynamic.
It's amazing, and I know I really appreciate the work that you're doing, kind of supporting people in that, you know, definition as mm-hmm. well as, you know, moving forward however they need to do that.
Well, what a wonderful foundation, though, for the Gellert Center, as you said, that this was about a way to tap on the alumni of USF to come back in and help the next generation in the process. It must be, of course, you have the advantage of being a professor that brings a lot of real-world work experience to the party. But I suspect what a nice compliment perhaps for some of your academic colleagues who have always been in academia, that you can season those two together.
I would agree. And I think the thing is that oftentimes in business schools, and our program is part of the business school, there's a real focus on the larger businesses, the businesses that have already established themselves. I think given the background that I have, what I've been able to add to the mix is a conversation how businesses get to that point and get ready to be larger businesses, looking at the kind of financing that's going to allow them to go to the next level.
Yeah, I think the other thing that caught me of interest, which is I suspect, I know I did not talk to your boss beforehand, to the dean. I might hear from him at some point. But the fact, Monica, that you've inserted yourself during your public service career through state, county, and city government, this whole idea of helping communities and neighborhoods pull themselves up and go to the next level. So it's more on the boots on the ground type advising, mediation, facilitation that you've done over the years that must really appeal. Then you can really talk eye to eye with the smaller business venues.
Yes, and I think it is I think it was a happy accident of my ending up at USF, mm-hmm. where there is such a commitment to having the university be involved with the community that it's based in. So the university has been in San Francisco since 1849, right before or around the Gold Rush period. And one of the things that our university has been recognized for, it is its way of engaging students in the community that we happen to be housed in. So our business students are required to do what we call service learning. And specifically, they are asked to put their accounting, their finance, their international business or marketing experience or hospitality experience, because we have a undergraduate hospitality program, and we are the only one in San Francisco. So they actually have to go out in the community, either with a not-for-profit or now increasingly with small businesses, to actually put their talents and what they're learning to use in the real world, and to understand a lot more than they would otherwise how it works, and in some cases, how it doesn't.
Well, and I think what an enriching way that indeed that public-private partnership then this really continues to mushroom. Are you finding now that more of the younger people have an interest indeed in tapping into the nonprofit, social entrepreneur type things, as opposed to perhaps, you know, the latest cupcake manufacturer or knitting emporium?
Well, yes, in a word. Our students are really getting, I think, more of a sense as to why people are in the not-for-profit arena versus the for-profit arena, or if they're in the for-profit arena, how much the for-profit world is really investing in the communities where they too reside.
Absolutely.
So our students have really been looking at Genentech, looking at a Kaiser, looking at Google, because we're fortunate enough to be right here adjacent to those businesses, and have them understand more about from a social and environmental perspective, in addition to the financial perspective, the kinds of things that these organizations are involved with, not just for corporate PR, maybe to get them over, you know, some bad publicity, but because they really and honestly understand that it adds to their financial bottom line when they are, quote unquote, doing good. It helps them do well.
Yes, and that it's really right there in their value set, which is a topic we talked about earlier in the day with Mark Samuel on the role of values and culture change and people wanting an accountability in that space.
And I think that's the critical piece that our students are understanding, that they come here, and many of our students, about 40% of our students, are coming from Asia. So they're being sent by their families here to get skills to bring back home. They're also being sent here because of the access that the students will have to venture capitalists, angel investors, as well as the technology centers, biotech included, that are here. I think what's happening, and it's in line with the question that you're asking, is that these students are understanding, again, really clearly, that these businesses are involved with trying to help communities that they are in. When I say help those communities, they are trying to make sure that people are housed, that people have jobs, and that this is part of the responsibility of business, in addition to trying to, in essence, be profitable.
Wonderful. Now, the other question I take us back, you know, Monica, your choice, you know, coming out of Northwestern as an undergrad in communications and political science, to find yourself into the California state system with working at the county and the city level, something you always envisioned? Or how did that come about for you personally?
It was a complete accident.
I love these stories.
I coming from the East Coast, I had not really been exposed to government. But when I came to California, there was an opportunity for a analyst position originally in Southern California, and I decided to take advantage of it, not knowing anything about city government, and then discovered that I loved it. It drew on my interest in kind of helping people, but helping them in a real specific way. So my first work was involving neighborhoods who were trying to, in essence, create a community park because their neighborhood did not have one. And they wanted to ask the city if the city would allocate money to them so they could make their own park happen with sweat labor, et cetera. And they had a very persuasive argument about how they could leverage and provide something that was of benefit both to them concretely and the city. And so I was part of the city manager's effort to try and help make that happen. And my interest in public service kind of snowballed from there. It's interesting because that blend of, okay, let's put your efforts toward something that normally would just be seen as a public project.
Sure.
But let's leverage everybody's efforts so that we've all got something invested and we've all got a benefit that comes out of it. And that's kind of continued in the work that I'm currently doing.
It is. But for you to say working in city government is something that I love, recognizing you're calling in here, we've called you from Tucson, where we have such angst and grading and the city council this and yada yada. And I've always been fascinated what attracts people to want to go into that space. But then likewise, probably people ask me that same question of you go lead these big efforts in large corporations where you know it's nothing but stress, but there's something that's, you know, kind of feeds that energy need that we have.
Well, I think the thing is when we can see a result
from
our efforts, that's what gives us the energy when we're in the midst of it to, you know, kind of continue to persist. So for me, municipal corporations are probably, for me, no different than a corporate situation, except it's more of the fishbowl in that my, you know, board of directors, as it were, is the public. The thing that gave me juice every day, Zara, particularly in communities that were very under-resourced initially, was the idea that we could bring people together. We could leverage the efforts of just regular residents with the business community, with the not-for-profit sector. We might bump heads in terms of defining the problem and the different ways that we could go about solving that particular problem, but that collectively, once we got to the end, everybody could see that there was something better there.
And it was something that left a real legacy for these communities. And as you've said, when you talk about the kind of things that spurred neighborhoods, like I know your involvement, as you and I have talked about in the past, of turning around East Palo Alto,
right. That
was sitting there resident next to some of the most affluent sectors of greater San Francisco area, but yet wasn't able to get across that line that working that municipality to, you know, bring it out of poverty and bring in stability. What a legacy that work has been for you.
Right. But I would offer that it's also the legacy, and I know that they would want to hear this, of Office Depot and
yeah,
of Home Depot
made it,
and
yeah.
of the Four Seasons, who, you know, were willing to take a risk. And it was clearly at the time, before all of this happened, a risk. Now people are driving along the 101 and they see the Four Seasons and they see the law firms, they see the IKEA, and it's like a no-brainer. But at the time, the businesses were making a risk. We as a local government was making a risk, and the community was making a risk. And everybody was willing to take that risk, and it's, you know, it's paid off fourfold for everyone involved.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, before we run out of time, I also did want to touch into the fact that now you're working full-time. It seems like you've got three full-time jobs every time I talk to you. Full-time also as a professor. So, you know, many of us who pursue doctor work later in life, some people will stand off to the side and say, yeah, but you'll really never transition successfully to academia because you didn't grow up there, XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get that sense at all for you, because I get a sense that you've really gravitated towards the right institution that knows how to play to so positively everything you bring to the party.
Well, you know, it's in line with what you are focusing on with your show, and that's this notion of circles of change. I think that if you're transitioning into academia later, after you've had other careers, it's important to look for a university that is in line with the values that you're holding. This university very clearly is allowing me to play on what I consider to be my strengths, that I've played in the public arena, that I've played in the not-for-profit arena, and that I've played in the private sector arena. And our university, particularly our business school, is very much interested in this kind of what we're seeing as the next wave of kind of a sector-less or a collaborative sector environment. And so we're really interested in leveraging business, not-for-profit, and public sector relationships. That's something that I had. That is something the university valued. And so that's what is kind of jazzing me about where I am and having the opportunity to take all of this to that next level.
And it's interesting because I suspect there will be others who would look at your resume and say, you know, we really can't figure what you're all about. I mean, you've done so much of this and so much of that, and my goodness, do you want to go get another doctorate degree? I mean, what's with this? You know, whereas you're saying no, that you can see this move afoot for the good of economic development and also education for the next generation, that being sector-less or not being so defined between public, private, you know, elected officials, et cetera, is really the name of the game.
Yes, because I think, you know, when we're talking about major, something that we discussed during our program, wicked problems, they cannot be simply the responsibility of one sector. So the conversation that is being held right now about, okay, what are we going to do about the terrible environmental challenges posed by the spill in Louisiana? That's not something that the public sector can solve. That's certainly not something that clearly the private sector can solve without the collaboration of the public and not-for-profit sectors. All of the people who are out there volunteering, various other agencies that have been brought in, they're not-for-profit organizations. Only between the efforts of all of them, plus the communities who are impacted by this, are we going to see some kind of positive change. I mean, that's my fundamental belief.
And I think the other side of it, for those of you that enjoy being in academia, you'd also say an age-less or generation-less environment, because the opportunity you have, I'm certain, to see these MBA students do service learning projects and the innovation, creativity, let alone just the simple digital know-how that some of us who are at a different place in our lives may not have, that cross-generational experience as well is so important.
It's really critical. The energy and knowledge, technological knowledge that our MBAs and undergraduates bring is impressive. The reality, the real-world resiliency that our more experienced business people and residents of community bring, working in collaboration with the enthusiasm and technology bias that our younger generation has, is really kind of balancing things, as I'm sure you've talked about continually on your program.
Isn't that really true? Well, Dr. Monica Hudson from the University of San Francisco and also director of the Gellert Family Business Resource Center based at USF, thanks so much for taking some time here today, and have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thank you, Sarah.
Take care. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580. Yeah. We'll talk to you soon.